One morning in early 1971, I went into the office and the MIO was there. He'd been provided with a desk in our office and orders were that he should be treated like a member of staff and nothing was to be hidden from him.
MIO, that's the military intelligence officer.
That's right. No, basically, the liaison officer between special branches and the military. He had access to all the files in the office. He had the keys of the file boxes. And he was turning out to be very, very helpful. I mean, the records in the special branch office were diabolical. Notes and envelopes, pieces of paper. It was like something from the 1920s. We had a clerk in the office, and when the MIO came, he sort of took over the filing and security of the file, started new filing systems, new report systems. He started a weekly INTSUM, intelligence summary for the week, which is the threat level for the next week, 2 weeks. To him, keeping records was paramount. Everything had to be kept on record in its own folder and in its own drawer. He was a stickler. It saved us a lot of work. You could go in and just put your hand on any file. Now, the MIO had been asking me a few times, saying he'd love to meet an IRA source, accompany me when I went to meet up with a source. On this particular day, I'd just been chatting to a source on the phone.
The Handler, Episode 6. The English-Irishman.
Right. Now, don't forget. Call me as soon as you hear. Right. Sure. Okay, chat then.
Here's the file, sir.
Thanks, John. Oh, and C7A as well. I'm terribly sorry. Would you mind grabbing the C7A for me as well? Head like a sieve this morning, haven't had my coffee yet.
No problem, sir. I'll be back in a jiffy. Bring your coffee too.
Thanks, John. James, I don't suppose that was one of your chaps on the blower just now?
Yep.
Well now, you do remember you promised to take me on one of your trips to meet these guys.
I never promised any such thing.
And now, come on, James, you absolutely did. Look, either we have trust or we don't. It's not like I want to go on all of your source meets. I'm only asking that the next time you have a meet, let me come with you.
Can I ask why you wanted to go? Was it just intrigue?
Well, I suppose it was intrigue. He had access. If I came in from a source meet and typed out the intelligence to be transported to Belfast the next day, he would have access to it even before it went into the envelope. He would have access to the copy in the filing drawer. He knew my intelligence from the minute I typed it. I might even have discussed it with him. So he wasn't going to learn anything that he shouldn't have.
Yes, but I suppose he was pushing bits of paper around without being out on the coalface seeing it.
Yeah, well, you see, he was always very... Well, he would be working on a file and he'd turn round and name a name. He'd say, now that guy comes from such and such a background. What makes this guy tick? Why did he turn out the way he did and his brother didn't? There's his family tree there. I wonder what got into him. The MIO, he didn't just read the A, B, C, D, E. He would read between the lines. He wanted to know everything. Why is this guy doing this? Why would they think that way? He was always working things out in his own head. A very, very intelligent guy. I can see why he wanted to join me on a meet. I learned a lot from a guy like that. But they had a lot to learn from us too. They weren't just coming across as instant experts. They were coming across to learn themselves. So, to cut a long story short, I did agree. I said, okay, be ready tomorrow night, 6 o'clock here in the office.
Well, at least you're on time.
Can I ask where we're going?
Oh, I'm taking you on a trip across the border. So let's get something straight. No weapons, okay?
Of course. James, that's not a problem. Let's take my car. The battery could do with a charge.
Of course, I realised later why he wanted to use his car. Because it was MOD and it had a bloody submachine gun under the driver's seat, unknown to me.
What sort of number plates do you have on it?
It's an NI1 at the moment, but I can change it.
No, it's grand. Okay, we'll use your vehicle. But if we come to a checkpoint, it'll be better me driving than you.
So I did drive on the way down, and we were stopped twice, first at a military roadblock in the north, and then in the south there was a permanent roadblock near Dundalk because the loyalists were threatening to mount attacks on the Republic, so they were hyper on the Republic about bomb threats.
What were the rules about operating cross-border?
There were no rules, but we got through both checkpoints okay and on to Dublin.
And we met the source actually in a department store in O'Connell Street, Cleary's. We met the source in the toy department because the source wanted us to pay for a toy for one of his kids.
So there are three grown men walking around a department store looking at toys together. Is that not unusual?
Well, Cleary's is a massive store. He picked it because it was always packed with people. We were just chatting. In fact, for the initial few minutes, the MIO stood back.
Do you not think you could have warned me? You can't just bring some stranger with you. I mean, who the hell is he?
You don't have to worry. He's one of mine, just an offshoot. But if you trust me at all, then trust me on this. You can tell him anything you're going to tell me. You have my word.
He's frigging on me, isn't he? Frigging Brit. I heard him talking there. Don't lie to me.
Calm yourself. Don't be making a bloody scene. Yes, he's army. But he's a good lad. He's different. He's on my side. He's not out for himself like some of those other clowns. And he did calm down. We were looking at toys and the MIO had a chat with him. I'm trying to remember what he said.
What toy did you look at?
It was one of those wind-up monkeys, a little three-wheel tricycle. But anyway, as we were chatting, he told us about another shipment coming in from the QE2. I'd been getting int for a while from a few different sources that every time the QE2 docked, it was carrying weapons.
Now, listen, you can't keep this. It's got to go back to the dump pronto. But
take a look at that wee beauty.
Bloody hell, put that away. Are you mad?
Relax, sure, it's tiny. Look, fits right in the palm of your hand. Snug as a bug.
22, custom built. Mother of pearl handle. Nice bit of kit. How many?
Half a dozen. But there's more on the way. Ladies' pistol, they call them. Here, when are you going to get that QE2 gap plugged? I've been telling you about it for ages.
We're working on it. Don't worry, it'll get sorted.
Could I not keep this just for one day? Run a few tests, get it straight back to you, Scout's Honour.
You must be joking. I gotta get this back. I better get moving. Big meeting tonight. The Chief's gonna be there. With the rest of the troops, you know. Have my wee beret in the pocket now, ready to go.
Wait, McStefan. He's in town tonight.
Oh, aye. Matter of fact, you boys could do worse than take a wee dander to Glasnevin. Any car within half a bloody mile of this hall is gonna be suspect. You may get your pencils out.
You're certain McStefan is going to be there?
Oh, aye. What's that you said? Scout's Honour?
Then absolutely. Don't want to miss the show. What's the address?
Here you go. Stick that in your pocket. And Frig, I near forgot. Take this.
What's this?
List of all the new lads who've turned up in Dundalk in the last few days, on the run from the north.
Told you it was useful, didn't I?
Aye, well, you remember that when I'm getting my wee envelope. What do you call it? Performance-related bonus? Right, I'm off. Give me a tenner for this here monkey. I can't keep the big boss waiting.
Sean McStefan. His name was Sean Stevens, but he liked McStefan. He used to talk about the English-Irish man. When the IRA split came, McStefan broke away with the Belfast crowd. They were sort of annoyed that the ones down south weren't active enough in the campaign of violence. And in the breakaway, McStefan was appointed Chief of Staff.
This was around 1970?
Aye, Cahill, Tomey, Brady, etc. McStefan fell in with them and was part of the breakaway from the official IRA.
At a dramatic meeting here in this Dublin hotel, the bitter divisions within the IRA at last burst out in the open. They'd first become apparent in the Belfast coup the previous autumn. But the final break came over an issue of historical principle. The Marxist wished to recognise the legitimacy of the Dublin government. The traditionalist regarded this as heresy. The IRA split and the provisionals were born.
The walkout was led by Sean McStefan, who became the provisional IRA's first chief of staff. McStefan has recently suffered a stroke.
I walked to the microphone and said, I pledge my allegiance to the Provisional IRA. Then I said, now, Akaja, it's time to go. Go. And we did.
A third of the delegates walked out with McStefan.
What are you going to do now? What are you going to do now?
We are setting up our own. We are standing behind the Provisional Council of the Irish Republic.
McStefan was ruthless. I shudder to think what the situation would have been if he'd continued on as Chief of Staff. He really, really believed that violence was the way to end the British occupation in the North.
Why was an Englishman involved in the IRA?
I've no idea. He had a history going back to the 1950s. Over in England, he was involved in a raid in an army reserve camp. Got away with weapons, but he got caught getting away from the camp on the motorway. He served time in England. A source of mine, an on-the-run guy from South Down, a great guy with cars, could hotwire a car in seconds. He used to drive McStephan about. People came from Belfast and Derry and all over to see him in Dundalk. He used to appear in Dundalk with another member of the Army Council, Rory O'Brady. The source drove O'Brady back to Dublin on a couple of occasions.
Is this Rory O'Brady who was an official?
Ah, well, they were all officials before they broke away. They only became officials. The name only came after the breakaway. At Easter 71, both factions, the Provost and the officials, were outside the GPO in Dublin, as they do, gathering funds on O'Connell Street. The Easter badge, wee paper badge of a lily, and the officials had a stick on one and the Provost one had a pin. So they started to trade insults, shouting pinheads or sticky. That's how those names developed. As a matter of fact, I was the very first to put anything into the pipeline about pinheads and stickies. I got it from a source who was there at the GPO. But it was McStephan who masterminded the awful bombings in Belfast in 71 and 72.
7 o'clock, news desk with Jackie Gillett. In Belfast this afternoon, as the streets were thronged with weekend shoppers, bombs exploded one after the other. Within the space of 16 minutes alone, 13 blasts sent people screaming from one place of safety to another, none of them knowing where the next explosion might come from. Over 20 bombs were heard in all, and the toll, as far as it's possible to estimate as yet in the shattered rubble and smoke, is 11 people dead, including women, children and 3 soldiers, 120 people injured.
The source had driven him a couple of times from Dundalk to Navan. He overheard a conversation one day. There was somebody else in the car who the source didn't know. The source heard McStephan say that the damage in Belfast would have been twice as bad, only they had a big shortage of detonators. According to my source, when the quartermaster was arrested one night outside Newry police station, wherever he had the detonators was unknown to anyone else. There was a big shortage after that for quite some time. The problem at that time was people were using makeshift detonators, always highly, highly dangerous. And they lost one or two men. They used to get a lot from Navan mines till Garda closed it off, and that made it difficult too. It set them back. But only for the big shortage of detonators in 72, Belfast would have been razed to the ground. My source who drove McStephan about, McStephan trusted him, though he fell out with him one day. McStephan asked him about the car they were in, and the source said he'd nicked it the day before in Drogheda. McStephan went bananas. "Do you not know I'm under constant observation by the Garda?" he says. Very, very annoyed at him. But he did trust him. He knew he was a good driver, and the source had transported some stuff, so he trusted him. And he kept me across what McStephan was up to.
"How's the farm, big lad? Was that last stuff any use to you?"
"Aye, some. Some. Plenty to follow up on. Here, there's an extra fiver in there. Don't be spending it all at once."
"Och, you're wild good, so you are. Maybe add a zero to that next time, eh?"
"Listen, I need to get back to Belfast, so I can't hang about here. Have you anything for me?"
"Jesus, well, it's nice to see you too."
"Oh, come on."
All right. Okay, some more for you on the big chief."
"Go on."
"Well, I was at a meeting last night. Only 15. Maybe 20 of us there. He was raging about the quartermaster being lifted, like completely flipping his lid. Can't get the detonators. He wants the boys to go all out. 1 cop a day dead, he says. Shoot 1 cop a day, every day. There was a boy who was there from Derry and Belfast getting their orders."
"Jesus."
"Aye. He says 1 a day, that'll keep it going. And he says, take the soft target, not the military."
"Christ, where are the bloody soft targets now?"
"And you know what I mean. He told them to target at will. You see a target, take it. You don't need permission, he says. Target at will is my order."
"Jesus, just as well I'm heading for headquarters. Need to get this straight into the pipe."
"Aye, well, be careful. This is getting very bloody hairy. There wasn't too many of us there. This better not come back to me. He was ranting about touts. He never stops. You suspect anything, report it right away. Not up to us to decide what to do about it. Anything suspicious at all, you need to report it. Frig's sake, every one of us was shiting themselves. We were all eyeballing each other. But seriously though, he rules with an iron fist, this fella. I'm not joking, he's absolutely ruthless."
This business of The Army Council did not order that, you hear. It was not sanctioned. A bomb that went wrong throws a bad light on things. Immediately we hear it was not sanctioned by the Army Council. But that's nonsense. The Army Council did not order anything. The Army Council... If someone came forward with a plan for a spectacular and came forward for the gear or finance or whatever, they'd say, yes, this is going to be good, go on ahead. But apart from that, a lot of these big catastrophes happened without the Army Council even knowing it was going to happen. So it was targeted will. The source heard it direct from McStefan himself. Then, if it turned out bad, they'd say it wasn't sanctioned. Only time they made a comment was when it went wrong and looked bad in public. Then they would say, oh, it was not sanctioned.
Did you ever have a source at Army Council level?
Yes, I did. There's one I can't talk about, I'm afraid. I'll plead the fifth. Source protection, maybe another time. But there were others not on the Army Council who were very senior and almost more useful. One godfather...
How did that come about?
Well, he wanted money. He had a family member with cancer. He needed the cash. He approached me with intelligence.
How did he know to approach you?
I just happened to be the one on duty that night when he asked for Special Branch.
So he just rang the station?
Yeah, and I met him. That was that. Purely cash. Needed the money for a cancer op.
The intelligence he was giving you must have been good if he was Army Council level.
Oh yeah, it was shit hot. I had to be very careful with it. Before he would talk to me, he sussed me out. We had a long conversation. He wanted to know how I would submit the intelligence. He was very long in the tooth. He wanted to know how I would submit it, who would see it. He wanted to be fairly sure, didn't want anything on paper. Don't type anything, he said. Drive up and give it verbally up above in Belfast.
But hang on, could he not have approached his own movement for money?
I'm not sure. I don't think he would have got it because he would have left himself vulnerable. If he went to his own crowd and said he was short of money, they would start to think this guy's a danger now. He could go down the wrong path.
Even at council level?
Yeah.
Because the provisionals, well, they were awash with money, weren't they?
They were awash with money. And the British government was giving them money.
What? How was the government giving them money?
They just didn't hand the money to them, but they did have a roundabout way. I was thinking the other day about malicious injury claims. And I'm not talking about a slap on the jaw either. In 1970-71, the government brought in a scheme to compensate business owners and others who had premises reduced to rubble by explosions. The claimant would engage a legal firm who would employ loss adjusters and value premises in stock and make a claim. But of course, the government required proof that the damage was caused by terrorism. So complainants applied to the chief constable for proof. And the file would be sent to a local special branch officer covering that area, who would certify that the damage was caused by a person belonging to and acting for an illegal organisation. All we had to do was say yes or no, and we weren't allowed to comment. It was a simple yes or no answer and the name of the organisation responsible. And all it required was a tick, a signature and a stamp. But as in all things involving large sums of money, it attracts those who see a way to make a quick buck, either by greatly exaggerating claims or people with old dilapidated buildings and old stock would end up with new buildings and fresh stock. So it wasn't long before the paramilitary sniffed out a fresh way to make a quick buck from their terror activity. I know that in the mainly Republican areas that I covered, the IRA would blow up premises for a fixed fee or cash arrangement.
So when did you first hear about this happening?
I think the first time I heard about it was a couple of years after internment, maybe late 71 onwards.
And can you take us back? How did you find out?
I think the first time I heard was, I think there'd been a bombing in Newry or Warren Point. Maybe it was Warren Point. I met the source. He'd been in Dundalk at the weekend. I met him Monday morning.
Jesus, are you ever going to hoover this bloody car? I've lain in cleaner ditches.
My, well, you smell like you've been lying in a ditch right enough. Let me open this window.
Don't be worrying. I'll be gone in two ticks. The boys need me back in Dundalk. Take this.
Car ridges?
Aye. Two lads down from Belfast to see the big chief. I dropped him up to see them. Couldn't be sure now, but I think he was passing them some detonators. They're like bloody hen's teeth.
Christ. Hope he's not got his hands on a new supply.
No idea.
but I know there's not many about. So there was another boy who blew himself to bits last week trying to make one.
I know. Horrible. But here, I meant to ask you, that bomb in Newry last week, the pub, it was a strange one. We couldn't get an angle on it. Is the guy that runs that not well in with your lot?
Oh, aye. Don't be worrying about that. That was just a combo job.
A what?
Compo job. Sure, old Paddy's an Alfinian. Don't think they ever even charged them for it. Just did him a favour. The chief gave them the go-ahead himself. They go way back.
What are you talking about? What do you mean, didn't charge him? Charge him for what?
Oh, come on, it's a comp job. His pub was falling to bits. Now he's going to get a big payout, new building, the works. The lads normally charge a commission, but that was a freebie.
So that was the first time I heard about these malicious injury schemes. But it's the old story. When you sup with the devil, when the IRA saw the sums of cash being handed out to property owners, deals they'd made went out the window. For example, if they were paid 5,000, they would return for another 5 or maybe 10. Many grand schemes were drawn up to elicit these sums from the government.
Like what? What kind of schemes?
Well, I could mention one in particular. From my recollection, there was a grand scheme drawn up when a group of businessmen bought an old gentleman's residence, turned it into a hotel, which they made sure always showed full occupancy, large sums of money spent on food and wine, which was dumped. They didn't even risk giving it away in case someone started to ask where the fancy food was coming from and they got caught. The IRA duly bombed the premises by arrangement. They received their fee. The claims went in for loss of occupancy, rooms and loss of profits, food profits, loss of drink profits. They needed to show full occupancy on the books for a whole year, orders coming in from the butcher and whatnot. But it was all dumped. Well, the majority of it. To show the assessors when they came what they were entitled to for their loss, so they could produce genuine receipts.
They spent a whole year buying food and drink?
Well, I don't know the exact period, maybe 6 months, but for a while anyway.
So just to get it straight, they were buying food and drink even though nobody was coming there?
That's right. Nobody in the hotel. It was lying empty.
But why did they dump it?
They dumped it all in case the wrong person would talk about it. They dumped it in a well-known waterway. Burnt some of it too. But they had to show good figures for the claim, which they were able to do. Once the IRA came and blew it up for them, they got compensation for the building and stock and that occupancy rate that was lost. They would get a figure for loss until they reopened. I don't know what the exact sum was. And when a large cheque finally arrived, it was a job well done, or so they thought. Like I say, it's the old story, when you sup with the devil. Unfortunately, the IRA were not happy with the arrangement and were tipped off by a member of staff when the cheque arrived from the government. They arrived and accompanied the people to the bank. The cheque was cashed and the provost took all the cash. This created a bit of consternation and some people got very ill. But the big problem was, you were never going to get any source to go into the witness box and prove cases against the IRA. And how could Special Branch refuse to sign a certificate? After all, it was the IRA, they were responsible for the bomb, so we just had to confirm that. It was a catch-22, a yes or no form.
This sounds like The Sopranos or something. Can you elaborate a bit on it?
Well, you see, at the time, for me, one of those cases, it might seem like it now, but it was like chicken feed to me. I was concerned with saving lives. This was fringe stuff going on. Everybody knew it was going on. It wasn't put on paper. I verbally passed it on, talked about it through Special Branch channels, but there was nothing you could do because, number one, you were protecting the source. And there was no way that anybody was going to go to the witness box to make a case against the IRA. The whole thing was cast iron for the PIRA. I was telling you earlier about McStefan. Myself and the MIO met the source in the toy shop.
Yes, you bought him a toy monkey.
That's right. One of those little wind-up jobs. But he told me there was a meeting with McStefan happening that night. So we followed him from the department store to the hall. It was in the north of the city, near Glasnevin. So we got to the hall and there were steps leading up to the hall. Maybe 8 or 10 steps. Looked like it used to be a church. The source bade us goodbye and we started to take note of all the number plates. We had a handheld recorder and went up and down and took all the numbers, dozens of them. The MIO, he was laughing. He had watched them all going into the hall with their black berets on, their khaki jackets.
I can't believe what I've just watched, James. I just can't believe it. Where are the police? It's an IRA meeting. Why aren't there any police here?
You've a lot to learn. As far as guards are concerned, this is a Sinn Féin meeting, not an IRA one.
Oh, come on, James. Every one of those lads should be lined up and have their names taken.
That's not the way it's done down here. Now, come on, nearly done. Let's just check a few over there, Beatty's Avenue. So we got finished up and got a meal from a local chipper, and that was that. Decided we would head on home.
Well, yes, I can assure you, a pasty back home is an entirely different proposition, James. My grandfather was Cornish through and through. That thing was the dregs of a chip pan wrapped in grease.
Aye, all a grown boy needs, and I've seen you stuff your bake with an Ulster fry.
Now that, sir, is fine dining.
What's wrong? Am I going to have to wind this thing up?
I'm really sorry, James. Oh, stupid. I had terrible diffs starting it this morning. Been giving a bit of battery trouble. They insisted on putting a damn radio in this car, you know, in case I ever need to call for backup in an emergency. Sometimes I use it and forget to turn it off again. It's been on the whole time and drained the battery.
And the thing is, we were park pointing slightly uphill. Couldn't even jump it if we wanted to.
Oh, for Christ's sake. Well, look, no point waiting around here like a couple of sitting ducks. Those boys will be spilling out of there shortly. Well, we'll have to lock it up and leave it here. Get a taxi and a tow rope.
Well, you see, James, I'm really sorry, but we can't leave the car.
What do you mean?
Well, there's an SMG under the seat.
A small machine gun?
No, a submachine gun. I'll not repeat what I said at that point. So we just sat and these couple of guys came past twice. And I knew they were probably Garda Special Branch because they kept looking at us and looking at the hall. I got out, opened the bonnet and tweaked the battery, but nothing happened. So we sat on and eventually it started to rain. Then the hall door opened.
James, where on earth are you going? Are you mad?
Back in a second. Sit tight. So I ran up towards everyone coming out of the hall. They were coming out in twos and threes. I spotted the source and I waved at him and he came down to me.
Ah, Jesus, how's it going? Didn't know you were down tonight.
What the bloody hell are you doing here?
It's a damn battery. The car won't start.
I knew that bloody Brit was a liability. Hold your nerve.
Lads! Hey, Johnny, Jimmy, hey, Liam, over here. Give me a hand, will you? These Belfast boys need a push.
So they came running down and I jumped into the car. The MIO fired the ignition and they pushed us up the hill. Must have been six shinners. They pushed us for about 20 yards and the car started going. It goes back to what I always say. You never know. Nothing is ever as it seems. We were driving home and I turned and said, now that was a close call. If only they knew who they were pushing. And he used to like imitate an Ulster accent and he turned to me and says, "Ugh, sure, the crack's good." Oh, I'll never forget that night. So, McStefan, I think what happened to him was there was a ban down south, a media ban and on radio and TV of Sinn Féin never appearing on TV, a ban on Sinn Féin imposed by the government. And I believe McStefan was interviewed by someone in RTE. I think they lost their job over it. They interviewed McStefan and whatever he said in the interview, the government thought it was enough to arrest him with membership. And I think they came down very heavy on RTE too. So he was charged with membership of the IRA. I mean, there he was living in Kales or Navan and able to orchestrate a campaign of murder and mayhem in the north. And yet he was protected, an IRA chief of staff. So I think the government in the south took the first chance they got, lifted him and charged him with membership. And then he went on hunger strike. He was on hunger strike quite a while when he was visited by Father Sean McManus, the priest, a friend of his. Both McManus and the IRA Army Council told him to come off the hunger strike and he did come off it and didn't die. So he was in diffs with the left foot, diffs with the right foot.
What happened to him after that?
Well, that was him out. They stuck strictly to the IRA rules that he had now lost his rank after being arrested. But I remember putting in a report from a source who'd been in Navan and spoke to someone close to McStefan, said he's not happy. They came up from Dublin with a message that he was no longer allowed to give orders. He was now just an ordinary volunteer. And if he wanted to help the cause, he should lift a rifle and go up to Cross MacLean. The order was take a rifle and help the boys in South Armagh, which according to the source, he did. He rang me and said McStefan's away up to some ambush in Fort Kildare across McGlen at the weekend. I put that report in. So he did do what was suggested, at the end of the day loyal to the cause even though he was dropped to volunteer. The very last int I had on him, a source said he'd seen him in a graveyard near Kells putting flowers on a gravestone. He said hello and he'd said hello back, but not much of a conversation. But the campaign slowed somewhat after the McStefan arrest and detention. And together with the detention of the quartermaster, these were two defining moments in the campaign of violence. Goodness knows what would have happened if McStefan had continued as chief of staff. We were lucky that he left the scene when he did.
Next time on The Handler.
On his visits to the bar, Robert Nerak always asked the band to play a few rebel songs. And on one occasion, Captain Nerak was challenged by the locals to sing a rebel song himself.
Do you never worry about getting caught?
Nah, not me, my friend. We'll never be caught.
But those guys could be armed.
Trust me, we'll get ourselves out of whatever situation we find ourselves in, James.
He'd been warned. I told him myself, his colonel warned him. He used to say, I've got a source, James. You'll never believe it. You'll never believe it.